As varied as our topography and soils, as rich as our resources, so varied and rich are the voices and stories of the folks around us. Come neighbor a bit with me, Sam Stroop. Grab a cup of coffee, pull up a comfy chair, let's get to talking. I wasn't sure this interview with Mike Teese would take place, but miracles can happen. Mike is deep into pulling cattle through the last of this winter and preparing for spring seed sales and planting his crops. And Kathleen are up to our eyeballs in baby goats being born. There's an Old Testament book of Amos. The third chapter and third verse says, "Do two walk together unless they've made an appointment?" So Mike and I set up a day and time. The stars were aligned and we were able to make it happen. Mike is a major player in Howard County agriculture, and all folk I know speak well of him. With family support and capitalizing on some breaks, he took the plunge into farming right out of high school. He found a helpmate in his wife, Paula. They worked hard, hung in through the bad years. Solid progress has been the result. So let's flesh out their operation. Let's get to talking. Mike, I want to kind of flesh out the nuts and bolts of your operation so listeners can get an idea of, I know what they're going to get an idea of. They're going to say, how does he get all that done in a day, in a month, in a year?
Right. Well, we run, we got a cow-calf operation.
Yeah. How'd you get started on that? Pretty early on with some cattle?
Well, I'll tell you how the livestock side started. We started with an SAE project when I was a kid.
Huh.
We raised...
SAE is an FFA.
FFA project,
in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
We raised hogs and we raised, sold feeder pigs all the way through high school.
Right.
Okay. Well, beyond high school, the hog thing kind of wasn't quite so good. And
yeah.
I got married. And my wife, she didn't like the smell.
Yeah.
And the hog prices had declined enough where we were living away from the farm, just had to drive a little ways. I decided it was, I needed to do something different. So after that, we got in, me and my grandfather, Ray Kimmel. He got me started with the cows and... I worked with him for several years, my father-in-law, my dad.
Right. Black cows right away? Started out with black cows right away?
Started out with mixed cows.
Okay.
This and that. But eventually, wasn't very long. We lived, everything was black, right. White face.
Yeah.
So anyway, here we are today.
Yeah. How has this summer changed your cow herd? Any? Did you get rid of some already last summer? Or?
Yeah, this past summer with the drought and everything, of course, hay production was down. Our breed back was not ideal.
Yeah.
It wasn't terrible. I mean, I think it was better than some that I've heard. But we had a few cows that were open, so we had to move some. Had to, send them down the road. Not only because they were open, but we didn't have enough feed.
Yeah. In a normal year, what is your breeding program? Do you put the bulls in a certain time or how?
On a normal year, yeah. We most all of our cows are spring bred.
Okay.
They're bred for spring calving.
Yeah.
February, March, which be right now.
Yeah.
So we'll put the bulls in April, mid-April. And we have a fall herd, which is smaller. And usually we've got that more for, if we get some cows out of sync, we'll move them into the fall herd back and forth. And so that's kind of, our cows, we run our calves, we feed them. We feed them up to 700-800 pounds, feed corn silage.
Okay.
Some years we do keep them and feed them out. Now when I say that, we'll send them out to a feedlot out in Kansas. We've got a feedlot that we use out there.
So if you try to get them 700, at what point do you put them on silage?
We put them on silage right after we wean them, probably 550.
All right.
Somewhere around that weight,
And then they're maybe on silage for 3 months?
Yeah, something like that.
And then they're probably about a year old when you sell them or not that
much? Yeah, they're just shy. They're usually they're just shy of yearlings.
Yeah.
when we sell. So,
What'd you put up for silage this year? All corn?
We put up, a pretty good chunk of corn silage, but also we wet wrapped oats and some Sudex. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess you would call that silage. It was baled and wet wrapped, put in the tube. And
how are they doing cleaning up the Sudex?
Well, they're eating it really, really good.
Okay.
They really
stocks
like it.
And all because
they're
of silage.
They're just cleaning it up. Yep. Yeah. Yep. They are. There's not much left, if any.
That's
usually
exciting.
They lick the ground with, right. when they get that stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
how tall was the sedan grass when you harvested it? Hadn't headed out.
No, it hadn't headed out, but most of it was 6 foot, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty good. It made, can't remember the exact time, but it made a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
And you have really your own silage equipment, or do you work with your dad with his, or what?
Well, I have a neighbor, chops our corn silage for us.
Okay.
We kind of work together a little bit. And then...
who's that?
Glenn Cotton.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, he comes and chops our silage. Mm-hmm. And then, actually, we had another neighbor that chopped some for us, too, Chad Fimler. He helped us. So I guess it was kind of a community effort,
really?
You might say. But we chopped all that, and of course we've got a couple different silos, and they're on top of the ground bunkers that we've built, out of hay or roadblocks, big roadblocks, and it works pretty well.
How many calves did you feed silage to this winter, or still are maybe?
This winter about 180, 175.
Yeah.
175 calves, so.
Right.
We had plenty of feeding to do every morning.
Right. Well, let's see. How much do you have to use vets, or do you do most of the work yourself?
We use Howard County vets quite a bit. We do. I mean, we do some things ourselves, but there are a few things that it's kind of above our head, or maybe above our facilities, and so we haul some in over there, or we have them come up too and use their chute.
Do you routinely preg check everything every year? Probably not.
No, we don't. Yeah. We have a few bunches if we suspect some there's above average, I guess, breeding problems or open cows, then we'll go on and preg check that whole bunch.
All right. So. Do you see much changes in what you want to do with cattle?
No. I mean, I think really right now, I mean, I think I want to keep everything as is far as the way we're doing it.
Right.
For the most part.
And numbers about the same.
Yeah. I mean, at times it would be great to grow, and then at times you think, well, we've got enough to do.
Right.
Of course, part of that depends, my son Colin, he's coming into the operation, and kind of depends on what he wants to do in the future too.
Right.
So,
yeah,
it'll be a, just depends on between him and me, whatever we decide we want to do.
Right.
It'd be nice to grow, I guess, some, but, there's also a point when you got to say enough's enough.
So I see cattle here at the home place. Do you keep cows that are calving somewhere else too?
Yes. We rent the Robertson Farm.
Okay.
What they call the Big House Robertson Farm. And then we've got three other farms that we own that we got small cow herds on.
Okay.
And then a couple others that we rent right around here close. So
this time of year where you're feeding pretty intensively, you've got quite a circuit to make.
We've got a daily circuit. It usually takes till if you run hard, you can get it done by noon. If everything goes well, everything goes well.
Yeah. And once in a while they do.
And sometimes it does happen like that. Not always, but sometimes.
On our farm, it's ho hum, another day, another disaster, ho hum.
That's right.
Yesterday was the 13th anniversary of the tornado.
13th yesterday was?
Yeah. Okay. Destroyed everything.
Yeah.
Except we had 120 head of cattle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where they were or where they went, but we only had one we had to destroy because its leg was cut up pretty bad. Right. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. I remember that. It don't seem like it's been that long ago, but...
Had a barn full of animals, and it just lifted the barn up and took off with it, and I guess the cattle were all okay.
They just stayed there, huh? Wow, I remember. No, I'll never forget that. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. So.
Yeah, well, we won't either.
No, I'm sure you won't. I'm sure you won't. That's amazing that and you were lucky that the animals were okay. I know you lost several buildings and
all of them.
Everything,
So half the house halfway was still there, but really beyond repair.
Yeah.
So anyway, memories.
Yes.
Hope you never have to experience something like that.
Yeah.
However, we got a new house out of the deal.
Well.
And that was a very good thing because we were tired of that old shack. And there just wasn't any hope for it.
Yep. Yep.
How many acres of crops are you going to be putting out this year? Can you keep track of that?
Well, this year we're going to have a few less acres of row crop. We're going to have a few more acres of hay production.
Okay.
But 1,500 acres or so of corn and beans.
Right. Is half of that owned?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, right. Yeah.
And then that you rent, is it kind of all dollar per acre?
Well, we work, we've got three different ways, two different ways that we rent now. I mean, there's 50-50 sharecrop and then cash rent, which was...
Do you wish it was all one way or the other, or you kind of like the difference?
Oh, you know, there's benefits to both.
Okay.
You know, when you're cash rent, you've got everything into that crop, and but also when you've got everything into it, you get the whole crop. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, when you're doing it yourself and you're cash renting it, you're your boss.
Yeah.
And if you're sharing crop with someone else, then, you know, they've got part ownership in the decisions too. So sometimes it's nice to do your own thing, but yet there's benefits to both sides, I guess, you know.
I've always been a grass farmer, so your world is really foreign to me. Closest we got was my son John one summer got it in his head that he wanted to learn about Western Kansas crop farming.
Uh-huh.
So there was a guy out there wanted to hire him, and we made a whirlwind trip out there. And I'll never forget his operation. It was amazing. He didn't own anything except a sprayer and a no-till planter. And a combine and a grain truck or two.
Mm-hmm.
And the area was just full of old maid or old widows, and they would pay him to do all the crop work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so he was just a custom worker.
Sure.
And he was out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you didn't see any other farmhouse lights. His mailbox was like 5 miles from his house.
Oh, wow.
And he was doing good. A modern Mennonite guy and just raking in some money off the old widows.
Sure.
And they were happy, but the desolateness of it. My son John looked around and he said, I can't handle this.
Not for me.
And I thought, that's too bad because you could really learn a lot from this guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No.
No, we can't
take me that. Home.
Well, yeah, and that would be tough. You know, being out there in the middle of, I shouldn't say nowhere, but you're a long way from anywhere.
Yeah,
and that would be tough to handle. I know, our row cropping operation. I mean, I more or less started it right out of high school, and my grandfather. I rented some of his ground, Ray Kimmel and Fayette. And then Pete Brown, Pete and Penny, when Pete decided to retire, I guess, from farming or move on, we were fortunate enough to buy his equipment and rent his mother's farm. And and that really got us started.
I didn't realize you'd bought his stuff.
Yep. We bought his equipment and that, so
Did you ever decide to be a farmer, or it was just in your DNA?
No, it was just kind of in my DNA.
Yeah, it was just, you know.
That's the way I grew up and mm-hmm. didn't know anything else, and that's, right. I guess I kind of did. I mean, I had choices, you know, mm-hmm. but I never thought about too much of anything yeah. else, just farm, you know.
So, like I was telling you earlier, I did study journalism in college, mm-hmm. got a degree, and I didn't know exactly what. And then about to get out of the Navy, I remember sitting down in the library in a long opposed city of the Philippines and deciding I want to raise my family on a farm. And I know it's a vow of poverty, but I didn't know how much of a vow of poverty it's going to be.
Well,
it was a good life.
Right. Well, there's a lot of benefits there, too. I mean, exactly. You know, there's always days when you sit back and you think, boy, you know. But there's always blessings too, and sometimes you gotta dig a little deep to find them. But there's always blessings out there if you really sit down and think about it, because you gotta go through some tough times when you're on the farm. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Now, what year would it have been that you bought out Pete's equipment? Can you
think? That would have been around 1990.
Okay, and you were like 19 or 20 then?
I was 18, 19. Okay. 19. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, that's because I bought his equipment and rented that farm. I believe it was in 90 or 91. Mm-hmm. And so, from then on,
Interest rates and equipment rates and everything, the interest was down. You could
right. You could kind of
you didn't
work.
Have to experience yeah. the '80s.
No.
Were there? Can you look back and say though? These were 3 years I don't ever want to have to repeat, or hasn't it ever been awful that way?
Yeah, I can look back on...
What was going on then?
Well, 93 flood.
Okay.
95 flood.
Now, how'd that affect you? Because you're on my bottom.
Ground. Well, I had a lot of creek bottoms.
Okay.
I had, in 93, you know, everything in Fayette is all creek bottoms, and they all flooded
that's
out.
That's right.
95, that's when we bought this farm here, the fall of 95 where we live here. But 95, everything flooded out. We just got married in 94, the fall of 94. So we went through the first crop season. We lived in town in Fayette, and we lost about 2/3 of our crop to flood, and we bought this farm. And it's kind of a, it's just a, I don't know, we bought this farm and I started buying calves and background and cattle. And so I guess there was a short period that we didn't have very many cows.
Right.
But we started background and cattle, and my father-in-law, Ralph Hankey, he helped me, and we bought this farm and we started backgrounding cattle. Mm-hmm. We backgrounded anywhere from 200 to 500 head of feeder calves for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of in the...
What you mean by backgrounding. What pounds to what pounds?
Well, we were buying what I call peewee calves, 300 weight calves through the sale barn. Mm-hmm. And then we were putting them on grass and hand feeding them. So we'd buy them in, say, February, and we'd run them all the way through into the fall till they're 700 pounds or something like that. Yeah. And then we'd run them back to the sale barn.
Yeah.
We had a couple gentlemen that fed a lot of cattle in the Hampton feedlot, and they pretty well guaranteed me they'd take a potload, you know, out of my cattle, just gate cut. A potload every year, and so that helped too.
Yeah,
you know, we didn't have to go through and take the commission out, but anyway, yeah, that was a big part of getting our operation started too. I mean, there's so many things, you know, with the row crop, you know, like you said, the tough years and the, you can just keep going in circles and talking all day long if you really sit down and think about it. You don't want to think about too many things.
Well, you know, the interesting thing you said, 93 was terrible because the floods and the small creek bottoms. Mm-hmm. Well, I was up high on the hills.
Sure.
And 93 was still terrible because it was so wet, nothing grew.
Exactly.
So it didn't matter if it flooded or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And so, and the third year, I mean, I can't really think. There's two years right there in the third year. I can't really.
Had enough
to been one of the drought, you know, drought years. This year was
2012.
Yeah, 2012, and this last, this past season was not the best, but it, you know, it could have been worse. So.
Did the yields this year kind of surprise you? Were they better than you thought they'd be, or not?
Well, yeah, in areas, well, they were all better. Corn in a small area was kind of disappointing, but it was probably one of the drier places around. But when, and I'm saying up north,
And
so we farmed from basically Salisbury down to Fayette.
Yeah, off there, off in 129 and G. Yeah. I mean, they had nothing.
That was it, right there.
One of them.
Yep.
How many acres was that? Was it corn?
Yeah, there's probably 400 acres of corn up there.
Yeah, I remember driving through there. And
yeah.
There's nothing here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stocks.
Yeah, they got, they just, you know, they couldn't catch rain.
Right.
Now we started moving south, and the corn just started, kept getting better and better and better. Yeah. And so, yeah, there was a wide range of corn yields. Now, our soybeans were excellent.
Okay.
They were excellent across the board.
And they came on late and surprised you, didn't they?
They did.
I remember driving through the bottoms at, I won't think of the name now, over, we call it Blue Bluff area, and driving through there and stopping. There's nothing on these plants, nothing, and they were full height. And then going back a month later, and beans all over the place. Yeah. How does this happen?
Yeah.
They're an amazing plant, aren't they?
Exactly. The late rains, you know, they just caught them late rains, and they held on long enough. That makes a lot of difference if you can catch the late rains on soybeans. So,
do you standardly spray all the beans the same way for weeds and the corn all the same way? Or do you know of certain problems, so your spraying is a little different?
Well, for the most part, we start out up front with everything pretty well the same.
Okay.
Whether we no-till a lot. We do a lot of no-till, and then we do some tillage. But as maybe I might call it minimum tillage, if we do any tillage. But, no, I mean, if there's any difference in our chemical up front, it would be between minimum tillage and no tillage.
Okay,
so that would change things a little bit. Post-emerge, for the most part, it's all the same. I mean, we run a lot of Liberty beans right now. That can change up a little bit depending on what we have later, whether we have a farm that's a little bit heavier infestation of cuckoo burrs or grasses or things like that. But for the most part, it's kind of a basic.
Do you do your own spraying, or do you have?
We do not. We do not.
Yeah.
We use MFA, and then I've got a friend that helps me some custom sprays, some for me, and we work together with him. But I have MFA; they do some of our spraying too.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably something that we're going to look into in the future.
Okay.
Doing our own.
So in the past, it's kind of been one more thing. I just don't know if I can get done timely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have our seed business here, which we sell Pioneer Seed, and that started back in 1993, the year of the flood. And so that's between the seed business and the cows and our row crop operation.
You can't do it all.
You can't do it all. If we do, we're going to have to get some more help.
Right.
And so you would kind of look at having somebody custom apply our chemicals as another hired hand, you might say. So that being said, you know, the seed business, it started in 93, and there's been so much change from the start. It's just unreal. With it, you know, we started out in 93, and that was the year of the flood, so everything started there. And anyway, from then on, you know, that year I can remember, well, it was $80 seed corn. You know, I thought that was high,
right?
And now you're looking at $350 seed corn where it starts. So that's really. It's really made some huge increases in price. So, but technology's all changed, and so we've kind of run from conventional, what I call conventional corn, to Roundup Ready, and then there's Liberty Link, and corn borer tolerance. And, you know, it just keeps going and going and going. And then now there is in soybeans, of course, that started with conventional and then moved to Roundup Ready. And now we're running into everybody's treating soybean seed, so we're selling soybean seed treatment. And we apply that here at our location. So that's another little task that we've all got. Anyway, but yeah.
Who else is comparable to what you're doing in the county? There isn't anybody else now, is there?
As far as the
selling seed and treating and all this and that?
Well, the MFAs.
Right.
The local, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that.
I mean, Ferguson's don't do it anymore.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Steve Shipp down there.
Yeah, I don't. Now, Joe Miller in New Franklin.
Okay.
He does. Right. And him and I are we're the two pioneer sales reps in the county.
Yeah.
And we both apply seed treatment
at
our locations. So,
well, when I go to become a big corn farmer, then I guess I'll have to deal with you. Maybe tomorrow, who knows? Yeah,
maybe so. You never know, Sam. So
they throw around a figure of corn costing $300 an acre in inputs. Is that at all a realistic number? Does that seem a little high to you?
No,
that's about it, isn't it?
If not, that might be a little. And it depends if you're paying cash rent, you know, if you figure that into it, then it gets higher than that. Yeah, it'll cost that. It'll cost $300.
Do you own all your own equipment, or are you leasing some of it?
We own it.
Yeah, have you got a combine you can actually fall asleep in yet?
Well, no. I guess you probably could. It's got a refrigerator inside, so you don't have any excuse to stop for lunch now.
Yeah.
You got to keep your lunch in there. But no, you know, the harvesting equipment and all that is, you know, came a long ways, and you can get over so many more acres now in an hour or in a day. And along with that comes the huge cost.
Yeah.
You know, but 20 years ago when I started, well, you couldn't get over half the acres you do now.
Yeah.
You know, with the equipment. And then, you know, no-till farming and Roundup Ready, you know, resistant beans, that has made farming a lot of acres a lot easier.
Doable. Yeah.
It's faster, it's easier, there's less, maybe a little less management. Now, in turn, with the water hemp that we've got coming on, which is water hemp's resistant to, there's just a lot of things. They're not killing water hemp anymore, but now you've got to start managing things a little closer.
Yeah.
Again.
And is the water hemp a deal of more crop rotation to fight it?
Well, that's part of it.
Okay.
That's part of it.
All right.
I'm not sure. I can't really tell you exactly why. You know, there's probably a whole list of reasons why that we have resistant weeds, you know.
Yeah.
Part of it being rotation. You know, there's some farms that never get rotated, planted in the same crop and using the same herbicides year after year after year, and eventually you're going to get out of resistance there. So.
Well, you may get a bang out of this story, but I was in business for a while with a Amish family, and so I've gotten to know them real well. And I had always wished, if there was a time machine, I'd like to go back to Armstrong in 1920 and see what it was like. Well, yeah. I got my wish because I go over and I watch the Amish farm.
Right.
So I didn't need a time machine.
Sure.
But it's kind of uncanny seeing the different worlds. Because I'll get over there and all around him is all the big soybean farms with the big combines. And there he is with his 80 acres that he's plowed and cultivated. And it's organic. And so while the farmers around him have spent multiple thousands on all their equipment and are getting $8-$9 a bushel, he's getting like $25-$30 a bushel.
Right.
And the economics are just strange because he's actually making some money.
Right, right. Yeah.
But it takes 12 kids to make that
sure.
money.
It takes a lot. That's what I was getting ready to say.
You've got to
have a lot of hands.
And a whole lot of horsepower.
Yeah, a lot.
Well, nothing compared to a tractor's horsepower.
Well, right. But, you're right. Yeah, a lot of feet.
Don't have to put fuel in your horsepower all year long like he does.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But it's a very interesting to just step.
I always enjoy going back and seeing the way things, you know, seeing that.
Yeah.
I haven't been in the Mennonite or Amish country very much, but it's every time we go through, I'm always amazed, you know.
Yeah.
And,
but like I say, the secret is 12 children.
Well, yeah.
They could not do what they're doing without the labor that they have.
Right.
And then I'm also part of the labor when I go over there.
You get to help, huh?
Yeah. If you want to get to know Amish people, you have to milk cows with them because that's when all the conversation takes place.
I bet that's right.
Pull up your bucket and your stool and go to it.
Get it? Yeah. Well, heck yes.
Yeah.
I can remember... when I was real little, my grandfather, I don't know why I can always remember this, but he had this little old stool, and that little old stool just for me.
Yeah.
And he'd milk them cows, you know, and I'd said he'd let me start on one certain old cow or whatever, and he'd milk, and I'll never forget that. And I was real little because grandfather, he passed away when I was 7 years old.
Mm.
And so it had to have been when I was 4 or 5 years old, you know.
Yeah, they milked quite a few cows really by hand, didn't they?
Well, I don't remember.
Yeah, 25, 26 heads, your dad said. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned water hemp, nematodes a problem for you ever?
Yeah, nematodes. I mean, nematodes are...
always out there.
They're always there. Mm-hmm. We've got corn nematodes, soybean nematodes, soybean cyst nematodes.
Sudden death at all a problem this last couple of years for you? I haven't
had too much trouble with sudden death syndrome, but now with the seed treatment we have nowadays, and we're getting varieties that are they've got better tolerance or resistance to the sudden death syndrome.
Mm.
And then we've got seed treatments that help with the cyst nematode and sudden death syndrome.
Wow.
And so we're using some of that in, you know.
Some amazing genetics have helped.
Exactly. Genetics, and then, of course, the seed treatments that we put on now, the fungicides and stuff, it really...
Any genetics to help with the Japanese beetles?
Not right now. Not that I know of, anyway. That has been a real issue the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing in the corn is they get to clipping them silks.
And I don't know if you probably get it as Today's Farmer or something. They had a whole section on insects. And did you read what they had to say about Japanese beetles?
No.
I didn't. Okay, it was very interesting. It said, right now they're hitting us hard, but there is a wasp that follows them. It just hasn't gotten here yet. And so we're on the edge of a nightmare, but... It will come and take care of the
problem. Take care of it.
Because it has everywhere else where they've been.
Right.
So there is hope.
Well, that's...
I was afraid it was just going to get worse and worse.
Well,
and worse.
Yeah, the last couple of years we've had them pretty bad.
Right.
We've had them real bad. You know, when you go around and you see the ear of corn where the silk's off the end of it, and it's just solid black with Japanese beetles, yeah. You know, and they're cutting mm-hmm. them silks, and that's yeah. not letting that corn pollinate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And usually just around the edges, mm-hmm. but still, you don't like to see that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we took a Aldi's apple once and took the seed out of it and planted the seeds, and out came all these seedlings. One of them got to be 3 foot tall in one summer. And really? Then grafted the apples we wanted on top of those rootstocks from the Aldi's seeds from an apple.
Okay.
But one of them didn't take, and it just grew up to be a big old crab apple, and it's got 10 million crab apples on it every year. I was all set to cut it down and get rid of it, worthless. But this last year was interesting. The Japanese beetles left all of my favorite trees alone, and they just attacked that crab.
Really? You just got to hold that one.
It will be spared. We yeah, will not be getting rid of that one.
Keep that one there for a while.
So well, it's funny how nature has its yeah. little tricks.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So.
You don't seem like a worrier. Well, or does your wife do all that for you?
No, I do plenty of worrying.
Do you?
Yes, yeah. I do. I mean, you try not to. A lot of yeah. times you're busy enough you don't have time to worry too much.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's yeah. best.
Yeah. Well, you know? 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when I do my little bit of worrying.
Well, yeah, that happens around here every now and again. Yeah, so.
Wake up and, oh.
Yeah.
So I write my to-do list and how I'm going to handle the frustrations that are coming my way. And mm-hmm. then after I've written it all out, I can go back to bed at
exactly
4:35.
Yep. For another hour or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, my wife does all the worrying for me.
Is that right?
And she did all of it for her sons, too. So she's just this little worry machine that takes care of it all
for us. She does enough worrying
you
for
bet.
Everybody.
That's pretty nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that is nice.
And if we don't give her things to worry about, she'll find them.
She'll find them. So well,
I'm glad I'm not put together that way. But.
Well, I do plenty of worrying.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just always something on your mind, and yeah. But like I said, a lot of times if you stay busy enough, you don't have time to worry about yeah. it.
How do you and Paula kick back?
Ride horses.
Huh. I did
That's
not know
kind
that.
Of a, well, we've just kind of started that in the last yeah. couple years.
You got trail rides then?
Yeah, we could do some trail folks? Rides, and okay. We've got a little trail around here that a lot of some evenings, if we come in and say an hour before dark, we can just hop mm-hmm. on the horse and mm-hmm. make about an hour and a half ride around actually back here around yeah. the city lake and
yeah.
down around.
All right. Are you close enough you talk during that time too? Or you just,
yeah. No, we talk. Okay. We talk.
That's
yeah.
conversation time just, then.
Yep. Have a little conversation time. And
heard something about a trip to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Was that a kickback time?
That was a little kickback time. Yeah. That was a trip was about 3 weeks ago, Colin, a month ago, about mm-hmm. a month ago, something like mm-hmm. that. Yeah, we were there for 10 days.
But you came back.
Yeah, we came back, and we came back in all the cold weather and the snow, uh-huh. and I was eager to get back, mm-hmm. you know, to get back to see what was going on. But after we were home for a few days, I was thinking, you know, Hawaii wasn't so bad. But we had it all left up to Colin, our son, and we've got one hired hand. And
lucky you. Whoa. That's a rough time of the year. Let's see, were you gone during the 18-inch snow that hit us?
No, I was here.
You were here for that?
That 18-inch okay. snow, yeah. We were here.
Maybe you didn't get that much.
That's about what we had.
Yeah.
Somewhere around 17, 18. Mm-hmm. We were here for that. And then, when we were gone, it seemed like it snowed and iced all the time, mm-hmm. the whole time we were gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Colin said every day.
It's been a rough winter.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. It's about as rough a winter as I can remember. And, you know, which I can't remember back that yeah. far, but
I got just one day on Hawaii, Oahu, I believe. No, where Pearl Harbor was.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Oahu. Oahu.
That's
when
Oahu.
I was in the Navy. And interesting thing was we were out on the ship and probably almost 3/4 of a day before we hit the islands, we could smell them.
Oh, really?
And that was pretty unique.
That is.
Smelling the greenery and the, just, you could just tell there was land there.
Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere on the horizon, but we hadn't seen it yet.
Huh. That's neat. Yeah. That's neat, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were on Oahu, and then we went over to Maui.
Okay.
Went over there and stayed in Lahaina over there.
A lot of time just sleeping and being lazy. Mm-hmm.
Being lazy.
You had some morning meetings you went to too, or not?
Yeah, we had some seed meetings that we went to, and of course we went to some meetings and we sat by the pool. Yeah. And we did a little tour and went around, went on a little helicopter ride, and rode over Oahu, and
I guess your friends are your family pretty well. And the guys that work for you.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
It sounds like you and Glenn Cotman might be close, or is it really a working situation?
Yep. I mean, got several neighbors here that we're all just kind of we're friends and in a tight little community, you might say.
Yeah.
For the
North Armstrong.
North Armstrong. Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, anyhow.
Have you solved the world's problems and figured out how we're going to get out of the tariff mess yet?
I've not figured that out yet. I wish somebody could figure it out, but we need to figure it out somehow, I guess.
I think a lot of problems, just there's a lot of beans.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't have some unsettled markets right now.
Yeah, the that's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, the markets there they've backed off quite a bit, you might say, but... you know, I've seen it a lot worse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know,
hopefully you won't see it worse or
exactly. You just kind of say, well, next year is going to be better. And that's what you got to go on.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. Are land values surprising you? It seems like they've, in Howard County here, doing some weird things.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like just when I think that they can't get any higher, sometimes they get a little higher yet, or they just keep going up.
Yeah.
We purchased a farm actually about a year ago here that we've been farming in
Nellie Hills.
Just here north of me. And actually, Colin, my son, he's living in the house now. But it was, I mean, I don't know if it was too high. I bought it, so you know. But the land prices they're all over the place in the county, it seems like. When you think something, there's a few farms that you think, well, they can't bring so much and they'll double that.
Yeah.
I mean, it don't make any sense to me, really. What do you think?
Well, I mentioned to my friends over in Audrain County in the Amish community, you can't touch anything over there for under $6,000, $7,000, $8,000.
Right. Right.
We're at least half that here, don't you think, for good cropland?
No,
not true in the bottoms.
Maybe. No.
But that's overpriced.
Yeah.
You're buying a sand pile that you can irrigate.
Mm-hmm. Right. well, yeah. I mean, you can,
Right.
Certain places, grass, great. So, but, I don't know. That's one of those investments you look at and you say, boy, you've got to stretch it out and go for the long term. Because
You know, an acre is, what, about 210 feet by 210 feet. And then maybe that's a little over, not much.
Yeah.
When you think of that space and clunking down that much money for that little space, it just, it don't make sense.
No.
Yeah, there's no way of figuring it out.
Nope. That's right. That's right. It's just...
And really, the valuation of land has kind of only been going up about 2% a year.
Right.
And there's easier ways of making a little bit more money on your...
Well, yeah.
Money sitting around, but just investing in land. So you better figure out how to make some money off it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, you can sit there and... Me, as being a farmer and being something close to me, I mean, it's awful hard to let something go.
Yeah.
If you can at all make it work, you know. But that's...
Do you get the Glasgow, Missourian?
Yes.
Your mom works for?
My mom works for,
Every once in a while, they'll have articles that just really, wow, this really has something to say. I'm pretty sure it was in there that they had an article on land values in Missouri. And the guy who wrote it said, you know, I really can't say what's going to go on, but something to keep in mind is there's a lot of farmers getting ready to cash in their acreage.
Right.
There's a lot of old farmers who are just going to kick the bucket, and their kids are going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm not predicting it, but there could be a glut of farmland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there could be.
Could be.
You know,
what's that going to do to the price? Was his question mark, you know?
Yeah.
What's that going to do to the price?
Well, that's right. I mean, there's not a lot of young people out that are
wanting it,
right. Wanting to farm, or that they can farm. Mm-hmm. You know, the big thing is there's a lot of young guys that, you know, if you had to borrow the money for everything to get into a farm, mm-hmm. land, the equipment, the livestock, the whatever, you know, without help, I can't see how a young man could ever do it. There's no way.
You had it with your family.
Mm-hmm.
I had family support.
Right.
You know, it's the only...
That's the only way.
That's the only way. You've got to have somebody there to help you out.
Yep, exactly.
Really do.
And, but times have changed. It used to be, I think you could probably way back, you could probably go in and borrow the money. And
well, you know, you sound like kind of an optimist. Maybe you're a pessimist. Where would you put yourself? You're a farmer, right?
I'm a farmer. It goes both ways.
You know, I heard this one said that the difference between an optimist and a pessimist is this. A pessimist really is an optimist, but he's had more experience.
That's probably right. That's right.
Well, listen, I'm honored that you took the time to rattle for a while here.
Well,
I know a lot of folks are going to be interested in. I'm amazed that when I have a show about farmers and farming, how many city folks say, "Wow, I didn't realize that. That's very interesting." I just kind of figure, all they care about is listening to sports on TV and.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. No, that's glad. Honored that you came.
Yeah, well, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Mike was pretty candid in this interview, and I really appreciate getting this time together. I hope what you heard and what you can read through the lines leaves you realizing what the payoff of character and hard work has been. Mike and Paula are committed to helping feed America. The greatest product of their lives and farms are the kids they've raised and are now launching. They have contributions to make to our community and country that will enrich all of us for another generation of Teeses. I'm hoping soon to spend time with them, with their oldest son, Colin, and hear of his story of also jumping into farming. So, we'll keep talking.